America's Legal Line Network now presents Weinberg on the Law on CBS Radio, WXYT Detroit, AM 1270. Here's your host, attorney Scott Weinberg.
Can drunk drivers ever be held accountable? How can anyone stop the next individual from driving drunk and killing someone? Well, today we're joined by Eric Smith, Macomb County prosecutor, who's trying to really put the kibosh on drunk driving. After graduating from Central Michigan University and Detroit College of Law, Eric was appointed to Macomb County Prosecutor's Office and worked his way up to Chief Criminal Sexual Conduct Unit, and now has been elected, obviously, re-elected in 2008. Eric, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Scott. Great to be here.
Now, I know your office over the years has really tried to crack down on drunk driving. This is, quite frankly, a lot of counties have. But when you have a tragedy, like we've recently have with that Francis Dingle, who pleaded guilty to the second-degree murder and received 22 and a half years for killing those four teens, how can any office, what does your office, be proactive about something as preventing something as awful as that?
Well, Scott, I wish more than anything that we could bottle the emotion of the courtroom on the day of Dingle's sentencing. I've tried too many murder cases to count, and have been involved in too many sexual assault trials and sentencings. But that sentencing last week of Francis Dingle, where four families individually got up there with pictures of Stephanie, Devin, Erica, and Jordan, and went through their lives and how much they're going to miss them. I tell you, Scott, there wasn't a dry eye in that entire courtroom, and that courtroom was packed.
Including the judge.
And, we do everything we can on drunk driving, but if this tragedy doesn't send the message to every person, and not just Macomb County, but everywhere, of the possibilities of what could happen if you get behind a wheel after drinking, I don't know what we can do. I mean, obviously, all we can do is be hard on the law and convict them every time we can. But when you see this kind of stuff, and the worst thing is, that day Francis Dingle was warned by the police, because she was drunk, not to drive. And the police went above and beyond to try and keep her away from getting behind the wheel. And obviously she didn't listen, and we're all suffering the repercussions of that. But Scott, I wish there was something we could do. I mean, obviously we started our drunk driving forfeiture program to take cars away from repeat drunk drivers. But
tell us about the forfeiture program. How are you guys coming to that?
Well, back in 2005, the legislators changed the law on drunk driving forfeitures, and they allowed us to go in on repeat drunk drivers, not first-time offenders, but repeat drunk drivers, and seize their car.
Yeah.
And what happens is, when they seize their car, either they have an opportunity to buy it back for a substantial amount of money, or we keep it and we sell it at auction. Either way, those proceeds go half to the police department that made the arrest, a quarter to our office for training and equipment, and a quarter to law enforcement-related charities such as DARE, and MAD and things along those lines. And as a matter of fact, we donated money from that fund to the funerals for these four kids.
Eric, so, do you think that forfeiture program, or do you think a financial cost like that, forget about the punishment a second, do you think the financial cost of losing your vehicle, do you think that has a deterrent to drunk driving?
That's what we're hoping for. And I can't tell you the stats to say that that's been true or not true, but you got to believe that at some point, people know that they're going to get behind bars if they keep doing what they're doing. But when you tell them that, we're going to take your car away and it's going to cost you, on top of the court costs and the hiring of your attorneys and the insurance, but an additional several thousand dollars to get your car back, we're going to do everything we can to make the idea of drunk driving as sour as possible.
It's not just the repeat offender, too. And I know that's where you have your forfeiture program also focused on and allows for those forfeitures. And I've represented several people that are first-time drunk drivers that, quite frankly, even last summer I represented that individual that was driving in Royal Oak, and first-time drunk driver, and plowed into someone. Obviously, someone was killed. That actually, they didn't prosecute with the second-degree murder. They prosecuted as OWI causing death. Tell our audience, how do you choose which one to prosecute?
Well, how egregious the facts are in the case. Now, obviously, they both ended up with deaths.
Right.
But in our case, we had the she blew at more than twice the legal limit. She'd had alcohol offenses in the past. The rate of her speed was in excess of 80 miles an hour. There's all kinds of things that bring that up from an ordinary negligence up to a gross negligence standard.
But, you know, it's also that our courts are always so focused on the drunk driving, but even that the recent case with the Chesterfield kid where he got, Le Corsair, where
yeah.
he was sentenced to just 6 months in jail, but it was suspended. Now, that again, that was a death case, but it wasn't involving drunk driving, and the judge obviously was easier on him.
Well, that's a difficult case, and this you had three kids die in that case, and they were sentenced last week, and then the next day you have Dingle sentenced where four kids die in a drunk driving accident. So, you know, two of the saddest days around here, and in the case that you're referring to out of Chesterfield, there was a trial charging manslaughter to one of the drivers, and he was found guilty of negligent homicide, the 2-year. So at that point, you know, we pled the other driver to the negligent homicide as well. You know, we had three families. In the most recent case, you had the driver where the other three kids passed away who was friends with those other three kids. So it's, you know, when you have that case, when you have that situation, you have, you know, the families are all friends. So it makes it a little more difficult. But when you have the person that we thought was the more egregious be convicted of the lesser crime, well, you know, we sort of have to do what we can do at that point. But, you know, that was a little bit of a road rage incident. And in this case, in the Dingle case, never has there been a more true saying of in the wrong place at the wrong time. Four kids doing nothing wrong other than going to get a pizza, for God's sakes, sitting at a light in a turnaround and to get hit by a full-size van at 80 miles an hour. And this van was airborne and hit them above the door handles.
Well, it's every parent's nightmare. We're talking to Eric Smith, McCown County Prosecutor here on Weinberg Law. You know, it brings in, because you mentioned they were obviously, and as part of your office, as every office, you have to have some type of plea bargain. And we had Kim Worthy on the other day, and we were talking about, you know, when you have a big county prosecutor like yours or Wayne County, Oakland County, there's no way you can try every case. It's just, it's impossible.
And
especially with the budgets going on in Macomb County, you have to have a plea bargaining policy so that you can not shut everything down.
Well, we've certainly, since I've been in here, you know, I've been in this office for 17 years now. As a matter of fact, the first office I was ever in here in 1993, I shared with yourself.
Well, that is true.
Back when you were an assistant prosecutor. But, you know, we have 22,000 cases a year that come through our office, more than Oakland County, less than Wayne County, but we have 55 attorneys. So you have 55 attorneys handling 22,000 cases. You can't try every one of those cases. So you have to develop plea policies. And our policies are, you know, no case is ever pled involving a gun crime. No case ever pled involving a child. No case ever pled involving a home invasion. A convicted felon never gets a plea bargain. But, you know, you have first-time offenders. You have nonviolent crimes where you have to plead these cases. We don't have the judges. We don't have the resources to try every one of them, unfortunately.
You guys can't have the resources even to have a receptionist. I mean, the budgets in Macomb, they don't give you enough tools to be able to do the things you really want to do.
Well, in the last, we were just discussing this today, as a matter of fact. In the last, what are we at now? In the last 18 months, we've lost 23 people in our office, including prosecutors, investigators, and secretary, and we haven't been able to fill any of those spots. They were all eliminated from our budget. And we only have 110 people to start in this office, so we're down to the 8. We're down in the 80s now. So when you lose that kind of those numbers of people, you're trying to find new and inventive ways to cover, you know, the caseload, which is increasing, which is steadily increasing.
You know, we're talking on the line with also with Sheriff Bouchard, and obviously he's running for governor. But we were talking about things going on in Mackinac this week, and they're all talking about the state budgets. Now, the economy, obviously, how we come out of the ashes here in Michigan. Do you see as a prosecutor that as the economy went down and actually just now maybe creeping up, do you see that crime went significantly up during that period of time, or is it affected by the bad economy?
Well, yeah, I keep seeing the studies from the federal government that violent crime is down in Warren and down in Sterling and down in Macomb County and down in the Tri-County areas. I don't see it. I hate to say it, but we certainly have seen more than our fair share of not just, ordinary crime, but violent crime. And now we see an awful lot of scams going on. It's spread from, from the south end right through the north end, and it's a sad thing that we have to fight our way through. But back in the old days when you were in our office, Scott, we didn't see so much violent crime, and now since I've been in this office, we've seen not just violent crime, but historically violent crime that's led Dateline to our office, and I think we have four or five Dateline shows that have been on national TV from these crazy cases.
I saw you on Dateline. You look pretty good.
It's sad that we keep getting on because of these crazy cases like Grant and Ream and all the other ones. But, the good thing is we win them, but the sad thing is they leave such a wake in their path.
You mentioned that there's an upsurge of different crimes. I was just talking to a judge here in Roseville. We were talking about, quite frankly, the upsurge in drug crimes in Fraser and Roseville. I mean, I've seen, and as a criminal lawyer, I've seen an upsurge of heroin coming into the county, too. Is it coming in from Wayne County? Where are these drugs coming in from?
Well, unfortunately, it's tough to figure exactly where they're coming from. They're coming from down south, and whether they stop in Wayne County or stop in Oakland County or stop in Macomb, we have our bus that come out of, we've gotten certainly a lot of them out of Arizona and out of Florida as well. But you're right. I mean, we have seen a resurgence of heroin that we haven't seen since the 60s. I mean, I went to high school in the early 80s, and, if anyone had alcohol, it was a huge deal. I never even heard of heroin or any of those drugs. And now, I go to schools and speak constantly, and you say, how many people here know someone other than, not yourself, but know someone who has used, and you go through a litany of drugs, and almost every hand is up. So it's troubling, and we do everything we can, but we're fighting an uphill battle in some regards.
You talk about going to the high schools, and I know that you guys you help out a lot there, but I want to go to the other generation. You talked about how our economy, and as it goes down, you've seen an upsurge of scams, and I know that you have more elder abuse cases. How are you going around and protecting the elders?
Well, that is something that has spiked higher than any other crime that we've had, and it's an easy mark, I hate to say, for criminals. You have the sentencing guidelines on nonviolent crimes such as elder abuse or and when I say abuse, I'm not talking about physical abuse. I'm talking about scams, financial scams. The sentencing guidelines on those are notoriously low because they're nonviolent crimes. But when you see the devastation that they leave behind, which is you have seniors who have saved their whole lives to be able to retire, and they grew up in a different generation than I did and you did, that maybe they're more trusting of certain people, and sometimes they keep money on hand instead of with the banks because they have certain distrust of banks. Well, the scammers have zeroed in on this, and they come and knock at seniors' doors and tell them that they're there to cut out the easy ones. Are they're there to cut the their neighbor hired them to cut the tree in the back that's hanging over onto their lawn, and the senior says, I don't know what you're talking about. I said, well, come on back, I'll show you. Well, they walk into the backyard with the senior. In the meantime, the bad guy's partner runs in the front door and goes to the bedroom and steals everything that they can that's not nailed down. I mean, something as right. simple as that is pulled off on a very often basis.
Well, it's amazing what a bad economy can bring out the worst in us. But we want to thank you, Eric, for joining us. Eric Smith, Macomb County Prosecutor, to joining us here on Weinberg and Law, talking about everything from, quite frankly, drunk driving to protecting our grandparents. Eric, we hope to have you back on the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Scott.
Take care. Bye-bye.